Microphones are live.
Very good. Good morning. I would like to call the meeting to order. The San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors beginning our budget hearings this morning, Monday, June 11th. Please rise and join me in the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We have the next 3 days scheduled for our fiscal year 12-13 budget hearings, and before we begin the budget hearings, we're going to open the floor to general public comment this morning, and this is for items not related to the fiscal year 12-13 budget. And when we complete public comment, general public comment, we will begin our budget hearing, and Jim Grant will have a discussion or a description of how we're going to proceed through the hearing over the course of the next 3 days. But first, let me open the floor to general public comment on items not on the agenda, not related to the fiscal year 12-13 budget. We'll begin with Richard Margaret. Oh, no, hang on a sec. We're going to begin with Ms. Tamley Douglas Schatz, our Human Resources Director. Ms. Schatz?
Thank you, Chairman Patterson, members of the board. I just wanted to give you a bit of good news. We were notified on Friday that the Association of Deputy Sheriffs, which is your deputy sheriffs and sheriff sergeants, have ratified our tentative agreement. And so that means that we have now got a second-tier pension with all of our bargaining units. So that was very good news. In addition, the ASLOs, which is what we call them, also agreed to pension cost sharing, so a 50-50 pension cost split with a cap for each year so that it doesn't go over 5% in the contract. Also, no wage increases through December of 2014. They also eliminated their formulaic wage increase, so that means we bargain all wages, no formula. So this is exactly as your board had hoped to achieve, and so I'm really pleased that we got there, and I'd really like to thank the deputy sheriffs and sheriff sergeants for helping us get there. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Douglas Schatz. That is good news. Now we have all of our 14 bargaining units on board, and we appreciate their cooperation and working with us to turn this around. So proceeding with general public comment, Richard Margaretson, followed by Al Barrow.
Richard Margaretson, a couple meetings ago you approved a contract with the school district with regard to recycled water, sale of recycled water from the wastewater project in Los Osos. This contract was negotiated without the input from either purveyor. The CSD and Golden State Water went to that meeting where the school board approved the contract, asked them to postpone it a month so the purveyors and the CSD could have input in it into the process. That didn't happen. School board approved it. And, you know, sometimes when you don't include the stakeholders, things after that really maybe don't work out to the best advantage of everyone. Since that meeting, the Los Osos CSD just adopted a rate structure eliminating the top tier in their rate structure, which was a special rate for irrigation for the two schools in the belief that they needed to recoup whatever money would be lost by the signing of this contract in the future. The school board also, as of their last meeting last week, was informed that, which I don't believe they knew at the time, that the schools, Baywood Elementary and the middle school, will be paying about $1,850 an acre foot. The other two schools, Sunnyside and Monarch, will be paying about $1,500 an acre foot when the water is available, but that the farmers will be paying nowhere near that amount of money. They were very interested in that fact, and maybe they would have liked to have known that before they signed this contract, considering they're going to be receiving the same exact quality water that the farmers will be receiving. On top of that fact, the rate for Baywood Elementary and Los Osos Middle School looks like it's the wrong calculated rate in the contract. So it'll be interesting to see how soon the board and staff get a call from the district that the wrong rate, which is a higher rate than they should be paying, was negotiated based on the terms in this contract that say the rate can't go above 90% of the current potable rate they're paying. So, you know, maybe 30 days and some professional courtesy among the agencies would have gone a long way. My last comment is your recycled management plan for the Los Osos Wastewater Project was stamped by an engineer. It's almost identical to the draft. It'll be real interesting to see how embarrassing this is for you when it gets to the regional board, because they are going to be.
Thank you, Mr. Margetson. Al Barrow, followed by Lindy Allen.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Al Barrow, Coalition for Low Income Housing. This is another version of Brusocio, which is Pinocchio's truth telling concerns and his puppets. So, Brusocio, have you told the truth to all the agencies permitting your sewer project? Okay, let's see the nose go a little bit, please. Thank you very much. Wow, that's a big one. The FER did not evaluate, the final environmental impact report did not evaluate the dewatering or the dewatering tech memo, which just came out in February. Why? No answer for that. The technical task force reviewed all the tech memos and the fine screening of alternatives, but not the gravity trench dewatering impacts. They didn't even have a tech memo for gravity. Why? All of a sudden, here it comes again. And to quote, the gravity trench removes 3 acre feet, 1 year's water supply. That is in my submission of 2009 at the Planning Commission appeal, which you were all present at, or some of you. They all knew just not how much until CDM Smith dewatering report, yet they did not mitigate the EIR report as is said in Sarah Wan's appeal. The Water Board letter advised the county comparing impacts from gravity and step collection as similar was inadequate. And finally, I would like to say that, and thank you, Brusocio, for taking the fifth on all of these things, because I know you can't answer them without, the DIG letter that came out, I thought was rather in your face, an invitation for the county to Los Osos ratepayers for the sewer. And it says, dig Los Osos. It seems rather rude to do that in a public relations card. So I would say, I would also like you to show that the lake, if you could. These are the lakes that are going to be dewatered. Can you imagine that not taking a lot of water out of the basin? Come on, folks. Those are huge bodies of water. They're deeper than the gravity pipelines, which in some cases are 23 feet deep. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Barrow. Lindy Owen, followed by Gwen Taylor.
Could you look this item up on your iPad? Because it's a general 21 section A. I don't
here, but it might be item 21 on your iPad. So I know which one of these he wants to speak to.
Ms. You ready for me? Okay. Good morning, Lindy Owen from the Prohibition Zone in Los Osos, where the nitrates are minimal. And if the county would follow the regional board's direction, we would actually have a test to see what has happened over the last 6.5 years. Hello. I came to speak again today about the Pavo Ogren by Nacimiento project that is now following up our sewer, because the sewer has been designed to empty our basin. As everybody knows, that is basically criminal and has only been perpetuated by complete fraud throughout the design of this project, from the original technical advisory committees that took the project and broke it into three pieces, confusing everything. There is no way to compare systems when you had it in separate little packages like that. The way that the plan removes all the water from Los Osos and puts us into complete crisis. Number one, the reuse is expected to treat the water, then it's going to be brought back out to different areas. One area is the Broderson, the famous Broderson leach field, which is destined to not work. And if it does work, the water is going into the saltwater front that we already have. It takes 13 years to get down there. I'm not a rocket scientist, and I'm not even a geologist, but everybody can figure out that if you have salt water and you put water behind it and you wait 13 years for it to get in there, if it works, that is completely useless. You've lost that water. It'll be blended with the salt water that's already intruded. That's what we're looking at, folks. They took an old disposal plan and revisited it, and it's not going to work. The other two uses are the six farmers. They're dry land farmers. The farmers that are serious farmers do not want this water. We should ask them why. And they're not taking the bulk of it, which is where it belongs, back out there. The four schools in town, as you've already heard from Mr. Margetson, how underhanded Mr. Ogren's plan to go in, and Mr. Gibson was very involved with this, to go in and take away contracts from our water companies by, and they're involved in the ISJ, which should have it. I just want to show, and then the dewatering. I want to show if the camera can look at what I'm calling Pava Ogren's Sel Nacimiento project. This is basically $32 million more for the community. Once you've dewatered my community, Mr. Ogren, this will come in really handy, and it'll work out well for you because you have a lot of water left to sell. That's mercury-tainted water. I can't wait for us to get it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Owen. Gwen Taylor, followed by Ben DeFada.
Good morning. My name is Gwen Taylor, and I'm a resident of the assessment district of the Los Osos Sewer Project. This board has a budget for the whole county before you, all permitted, printed out for you to change, adjust, or question. Those of us property owners in the assessment district for the Los Osos Sewer Project have not and do not have any written budget for the sewer project. Isn't that wonderful? The amount of grants, loans from the state, federal government assigned to the project has not been printed out. Those in the assessment district cannot budget for the monthly costs or the costs amounts to go on the tax bills. We don't know what it is. The Public Works Department has printed out a budget or an economic cost breakdown for all the costs attributed to the cost of the sewer. We have not seen such. There were four homes lost last month in the assessment district listed for sale for unpaid property taxes. How many more do you expect? There are vacant, unoccupied properties in the assessment district that people have just walked away from due to the loss of jobs. The job situation for federal, state, and county workers continues to be a challenge to everyone. as well as questions as to the income that will still be available to those working. Many that have jobs cannot get adequate loans on their property due to the lack of equity. How do you even apply for a loan if you don't know what all the cost of the sewer project will be, let alone the cost of the hookups? Those in the assessment district cannot budget for the sewer as there are no figures to use to budget. You get to budget. We don't. An economic audit of those living in the assessment district is long overdue. The latest design of the County Public Works for Los Osos came in the form of a glossy, and I repeat, glossy, postcard. This postcard on the front has what is called a logo. The card states, Los Osos Wastewater Collection System in bold letters. Dig Los Osos. This is just another disparaging reference about Los Osos, a community under extreme financial stress.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Ben DeFatto.
You two always intended to bypass a cheaper alternative, while always your real intentions were to have competitive bidding from owning the gravity collection project contract with the most expensive sewer in the nation per capita. Look all around you. People are suffering because of overtaxation by all government entities. It's right there in the papers every week. 50% of our citizens now get a check from a government program, be it a job, food stamps, housing, and the many other programs that have creeped into the last 60 years, becoming a slave to government. Yet locally, Gibson and you other four on this board are going down the same sewer hole of destroying the lives of several thousand of those that reside in the sewer zone of Los Osos. Government control and regulations are future by taxing us into the debt with inflation, overtaxation, into debt that is hard to crawl out of a financial hole that's stealing their futures. These property owners and or renters that are on disability, welfare, low, medium, and middle incomes are at your mercy and depend on the five of you to come up with an affordable sewer project. But your actions say you don't care. Many have suffered loss of their savings, their equity in their homes, their businesses, and the pursuit of happiness with your out-of-control, irresponsible spending at a time when the world is going to hell. We have seen where the voters threw out of office one who wants to fine people that continue to use plastic bags. And worst of all, the use of parking meters on Sundays is disgraceful. What next? It's bad enough you're taxed again when someone is laid to rest, depriving a family of some comfort, like the dictators that roam this earth, causing many to suffer, die, or be thrown out of their homes. Their day will come when they will have to pay the rest of their days in hell.
Thank you, Mr. DeFatto.
Thank you, too, sir.
Gary Freiberg, followed by Eric Greening.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm Gary Freiberg, resident of Los Osos for 25 years, and I want to make sure I'm not misunderstood. I'm not talking directly to Mr. Meacham. I just would like to say congratulations. I think getting 98% of your constituents' vote without any opposition, it's really something to be very, very proud of. And I think that it shows good representation of its constituency and also that the people in the district trust Mr. Meacham that he is looking out for what is their best interests. And I was interested, sir, Mr. Patterson, by your comment in theorizing why you lost. And one of the things that you said was that it was because of the economic downturn and its effect on people's lives. The economic downturn and its effect on people's lives. And then I saw a headline on May 31st of USA Today, and they're talking about the November election, and it says the headline was, it's a job, stupid. And I'm thinking about Bill Clinton's 1992 election where it said it was the economy, stupid. And then in a recent Tribune article last Friday, Maggie Cox, who is on the Economic Forecast Board, says you cannot begin to talk about our local economy unless you talk about jobs. And then I think about what Supervisor Gibson said to me a couple of weeks ago when we were on the break, when the high school students were here receiving their scholarships. I positioned myself by the door, and I wanted to thank Mr. Gibson for listening to all of this every week. And he looked right at me and said, "Economics don't matter," referring to the Los Osos Sewer Project. "Economics don't matter." And I go, "Really?" This is what I'm thinking to myself. "Really? Economics don't matter?" And then I read there's 13,000 retail jobs in our county. And the loss of $15 million every year for the next 40 years in economic stimulus is going to impact those jobs. And I wonder if the businesses that employ those 13,000 people and those 13,000 people in the retail jobs, if they believe that economics don't matter. I would suggest respectfully, Mr. Meech, Mr. Hill, you're here until now, 2016, the next election in 2 years, 2014, that I hope that you would think, if you were voting for this project, $190 million on 5,000 households in your district, would have you run unopposed? Would have you gotten over 60% of the vote? Would people have supported you the way that they did if you were voting and for a $190 million project? I don't agree with Supervisor Gibson. I think the economics matter a lot. And I think that while you take a look at this budget that's coming up over the next few days, that you keep in mind the fact that the budget does matter. The economy does matter. And the decisions that you make is going to have a long impact. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Freiberg. Eric Greening, and that concludes my request to speak and general public comment. Mr. Greening.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and good morning. One that has gotten very little attention but needs to start getting attention is to be prepared for invasive organisms to have made the crossing with and in that debris. Recently, a few hundred miles north of here, a 60-some-foot section of pier came ashore, and on that and inside some of the superstructure of that were everything from living starfishes, various types of kelp, various shelled creatures, and so on. Since that particular piece was noticed, it was essentially cooked. They blowtorched the whole thing, which isn't a nice thing to do with creatures who have this incredible ability to survive a long, perilous journey and finally arrive somewhere, but obviously it was done out of concern for destabilizing the ecosystem of the creatures that are already here. But are we actually watching everything that comes across? I have not heard any particular plan in place for dealing with marine debris in general and marine debris that may contain invasive organisms in particular, monitoring when or whether anything might come ashore in this county or adjacent counties and how we will deal with it. And so I would strongly urge you to set a hearing to examine that issue as well as the many other issues that we can learn from the experience of the tsunami and the radioactive releases in Fukushima and apply to our own lives here. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. I'll close general public comment, and we'll move on after a comment from Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you.
Go ahead. You have one?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I did want to make a short announcement regarding the Los Osos Wastewater Project, but first I feel compelled to respond to Mr. Freiberg, who inaccurately recounts the conversation we had out in the lobby. And I absolutely pointed out to him that there were many inaccuracies in his economic analysis, such as it is. I also pointed out to him, as we have discussed many times here, that it would be nice if we could choose to do this wastewater project on the matter of how much it costs. But unfortunately, there are forces that compel us to do this, and we have always said that we are working as hard as we possibly can to bring the cost of this project as low as it possibly can go. So I'm sorry, Mr. Freiberg, having come fairly late to the commentary on this, has fallen in with the half dozen or other frequent commenters we have, and continues to perpetuate misrepresentation.
Excuse me. Hey, please. No outbursts from the audience. I would have to ask you to leave if you can't.
I will leave.
Okay, please do so. Please do so.
It's a sad...
Well, you talk to me like a man and not when I can't say anything.
Yeah.
And you did say that. I was calling you a liar.
Bruce, so, that was gutless, Bruce.
So the you know, I don't know if
the audience is smarter than the board.
It's unfortunate that that this is the standard of public discourse that we've had to endure over a number of months, and you know, I don't know if the listening public can quite understand, but our frequent commenters from Los Osos generally occupy the last rows of the chamber here, and as they shout out while I was trying to make response here, they tend to disrupt the proceedings. What I did want to announce as regards the wastewater project is that there will be a public meeting on, believe it will be then Thursday, let me do the math correctly, Wednesday, the 19th of June, 7 to 9 p.m. at the Los Osos Middle School. And the purpose of this is to get the public up to speed on where the project is. The project has actually, in a formal sense, commenced construction. We have been working on certain small road projects, and we are also in the process of restoring the Midtown site, which is all part of the permit. We are scheduled to be awarding contracts on the main part of the collection system in coming weeks. And we'll look forward to being under full construction as we move into the middle of the summer.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Gibson. Please, no more outbursts from the audience.
It's Tuesday, not Wednesday.
So that's all right. So my math was incorrect. I guess the 19th does amount to a Tuesday. The meeting is Tuesday, the 19th. I'm a little thrown off by the fact that we're meeting on a Monday today. But again, there'll be a number of informative presentations on how the public can gain information about the upcoming activities in the community, and we hope that one and all can
pick up or whatever the case may be that comes on our shores.
We have Mr. Alsop here. He's the
Mr. Alsop.
Is he going to do it?
He may.
Right. Good
morning. He may. Hey, Ron. I'm
going to speak, Ron.
Yes.
Morning, Ron Alsop, County Office of Emergency Services. This is a late-breaking issue. In fact, just when you asked the question, Supervisor Meacham, I was copy and pasting an instant message to the staff upstairs to post a link on our website. It's a joint effort with both Canada and the United States. The lead agency is the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration monitoring it. Within California, the California Emergency Management Agency has taken the lead. And within the county, I don't want to misspeak, but when my passing conversation with Environmental Health, Kurt Batson is having his staff draft up an initial plan. But Mr. Grant is correct in that most of the debris is anticipated to go north of us, particularly up in Washington and in Canada, which is we're seeing the impacts now, but due to the offshore ocean current. But we are working up a local response plan, and we have had conference calls with CalEMA, the NOAA folks, and others, and we'll certainly put a link on our website that will have general information from NOAA, and that link includes a site that if people find something that they suspect is from Japan, to actually report it via email. Or, of course, they can certainly call County Environmental Health or our office, the County Office of Emergency Services. But we'll post some general information on our website this morning.
And that would be the Office of Emergency Services at the County of San Luis Obispo. Is that where you're posting this?
Yeah, so if folks go to the county website and look for emergency services, and we'll put a link right on that page.
Very good. Thanks,
Ron. And if you go out to pick stuff up, let me know. I'll be happy to go help you.
Sure. Well, it depends on what I find.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Well, we'll move on with our budget hearing, and I'll ask CAO Jim Grant to speak to the process, and then I guess our budget director, Dan Buckshy, will lead us through the process. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Again, Jim Grant, County Administrative Officer, here with Dan Buckshy, Assistant County Administrative Officer and Budget Director. He'll provide the details. I'll provide the the highlights and maybe the comedy. Who knows? We'll see how this goes. Welcome to the budget hearings for the 2012-13 proposed budget. This morning, if we could bring up the slideshow, that would be nice. We can walk through a few of the details for you. The schedule is as follows, and as you can see on the screen, we're going to start today. We're going to have a closed session sometime this afternoon and adjournment at 5 o'clock, coming back tomorrow if needed to handle the rest of the budget functional areas. And then on Wednesday at 9 a.m., there will be a hearing on contributions to outside agencies. So we are continuing those hearings. If needed, we'll have another closed session, and we'll adjourn. That carries the actual budget hearings over to next week, I believe it is, where the board would take up the final action on the budget. So today, what we have planned is that we'll start with some overview, as we typically do, and then we'll get into what we call functional areas of the budget. And that includes, for instance, starting off with the first one is land-based budget. That includes ag commissioner, planning, public works, roads, and special districts. And your board will take a look at each of those if you'd like to do it in that fashion. But we'll have public comment on each of those functional areas first. So once you call land-based budgets, there will be a public comment period for anybody who wants to stand up and say a few words, and then the board can consider those budget units. And we'll go down and do those throughout the day for the variety of functional areas, public protection, health and human services, and et cetera, as we go through those. So here we go right here, the order of review. You can see there's quite a few of them, so we'll see how it runs. So a couple of comments before we get going on the approach and the budget framework is that I certainly want to thank the board for their efforts in providing some the policies to get to a balanced budget that we have today. We're still looking at about a $2 million gap. We're in year 5 of the 7-year pain plan. It's working as it's intended. We started, as you know, a number of years ago with a high of $30 million gap. It's down to 2. We hope with any luck in our skill that we'll bring it down to virtually nothing next year, and the year after that certainly will be at what we hopefully would be that new normal. I also want to thank also the department heads and all the employees who have really stepped up to make this happen. We've had certainly a long challenges for us over the last couple of years, but we have we've really the Distinguished Budget Presentation Award. So that's in the mail.
With a check, I presume.
Does it come with a check?
It doesn't come with a check, as far as I know. It would be nice if it did. But that's a result of a tremendous amount of hard work from the administrative office employees. All the analysts, all the support staff, everybody's kicked in to make this a very readable document, a very useful document. And I really want to point out and praise Emily Jackson, our analyst who was in charge of this. She did a great job putting this together, made sure everybody met their timelines to get this in and get this this presentation. It does mean a lot to us, and it's only, I think, 7 other counties right now have this distinguished award, so we're in good company, and I want to thank the staff for doing that. So with that, we're going to launch into the budget approach and budget framework, and I'm going to turn it over to Dan Buckshy, but it looks like the auditor controlling, Chair Sibok, would like to say something first.
He's preempting the budget presentation here with good news, I'm sure, Mr.
Yes,
Sibok.
Yes, it's Jerry Sibok, County Auditor Controller, and I do also congratulate Jim Grant and the administrative office staff on getting that award for a distinguished budget presentation. It does take a lot of work and effort. And it's something to be proud of. But what I wanted to do was mention that there is an obscure government code that hardly anybody knows about that requires the county auditor to be present during all budget hearings. And this year, I wanted to introduce my representative who will be performing that official function, Teresa Andrews Hurleyman, for the first time. This is her first time, so be kind to her. But she is an excellent accountant. And her role really is just to tabulate what changes your board may make, and to make sure that the accounting is proper. If there's some questions, technical questions or something, you can ask her about them, and we'll try, and she will try to get answers for you. But we're looking forward to having Teresa working with you for a number of years now. So, thanks.
And prior to Teresa assuming that role, we have Andrea McGarry here, who's, I guess, working backup.
I'm back.
Okay. Important to have that kind of expertise. And welcome, Teresa, and we won't ask too many hard questions, I'm sure. So, Mr. Grant, you've finished your remarks, so I'll turn it over to Mr. Buckshy. Is that
correct?
Correct. Okay. Dan, would you like to proceed with the presentation, please?
Yes. Good morning. You know, to kick things off, I don't have anything new, and that is by design here for the introductory piece. Yes, as Mr. Grant noted, we're 5 years into our plan that we've been carefully plotting and moving through. In addition, for this particular budget year, we started back in October to really start working on this in detail. And so from my perspective, there really shouldn't be anything new or any new surprises at this stage in the game. This is really the opportunity for your board to review this budget one last time, make any modifications as you see fit, and just as importantly, an opportunity for the public to weigh in after having about a month to review this. So with that, I will dive in and review an overview. Starting off, first and foremost, the overall goal of the budget is to help achieve the county's vision of a safe, healthy, livable, prosperous, and well-governed community, and I think we've made some good headway in pursuit of that vision. In addition, we want to incorporate the county's mission statement to serve the community with pride in order to enhance the economic, environmental, and social qualities of life in the county and carry out our organizational values of integrity, collaboration, professionalism, accountability, and responsiveness. And again, I believe that that has set the framework from which we build the budget. So the overall approach, most importantly, we comply with all laws, more specifically the State Budget Act. We've taken our best shot at complying with the budget goals and policies, the balancing strategies, and your board's priorities. This is not a one-size-fits-all budget. We do try to put everything in priority order. Additionally, we've attempted to maintain as many programs and services as possible. There are a few expanded programs as well for the first time in I would say, a few years. And also important is to strike that balance by also maintaining fiscal health, maintaining our low debt levels and our high reserve levels as we've been able to do through these 5 years. Those are key components of the seven-year plan. And then lastly, I'm pleased to announce that once again, we have avoided layoffs for this year. And most recently, I believe the SLOSIA membership voted to avoid having any layoffs from prior years. As you may recall, back in 2009-10 and 2010-11, looking at the numbers, you can see we're at about $465 million in the current year, and we're up about $5 million or 1%. It's a bit misleading, and that is because of the state realignment, AB 109, that transferred the responsibility for several individuals in the state parole and prison system to counties, and we received money along with that. If it were not for that transfer, we would either be flat or slightly decreasing. Same holds for the general fund, more or less. You can see the increase there, again, largely driven by that. The supplemental budget is really to address issues of timing. We finalized the numbers for this budget in the April time frame, and obviously here we are mid-June holding the hearings. During that time, some things changed. Most notably, during budget hearing or between board meetings between April and now, your board has taken some action to the current year's budget, which impacts the upcoming year. And as you can see here, we're adding about $23,000 of expenditures in 2.5 positions, which are all funded with outside funding. There is no general fund. So a very small supplemental budget this year with really nothing substantive to speak of. An overview of the funding, as you can see, state and federal funding comprises about 40% of the budget, and that is why we spend so much time following the state budget and trying to participate as much as possible. The other piece, taxes, 31%, is primarily property tax, makes up the lion's share. And then looking at where the money goes, how we spend the revenue that's received, you can see public protection in at about a quarter and health and human services at 38%. All told, those two comprise about two-thirds of the budget. And again, that's why we focus so much on those particular areas. So what are the assumptions that we used to help build this budget? We believe that we're still near the bottom. We feel like we've bounced off it slightly. We're seeing a few signs of improvement in a handful of revenue sources, which is good news. It's better than the other direction. Overall, relatively flat, but we are bouncing up a bit. And as I already mentioned, this does include the public safety realignment. It does include staffing and resources to support the construction of the solar plants. The resources were added for county fire, sheriff, and code enforcement. We've maintained the 4% contingency level. Prior to the 7-year plan being put in place, the board's budget policy has been a 5% contingency, but we lowered that to 4 and maintained that through this year as well. And then very importantly, that because the state budget is still in a state of flux, we have not built in any of the major changes at this point because it's still too unknown. So the overall approach is to comply with your board's priorities in terms of how things are funded. First and foremost, this budget does meet all legal mandates. We will keep our creditors whole as we are planning to meet all debt service requirements. And I can tell you that having just sat in on the review rating for our bond rating, that the creditors are very interested in this priority, that this is our second most highest priority after meeting legal mandates, is to meet our debt to keep our creditors whole. It is very important. Then lastly, you can see here public safety is your board's third highest priority as defined by 4 specific departments. And relative to other departments, they are funded at a higher level. They're generally kept whole this year with respect to general fund support, whereas most of the other departments are seeing a 1% to 3% decrease. Again, not a one-size-fits-all, but that's the general range. Staffing implications, it's a net loss of 3 positions for this year. They are all vacant, and you can see we've lost roughly 10% of the workforce over this 5 years. And about 250 positions, and as the note indicates there, about 40 positions were added mid-year. Roughly 28 of those are related to the realignment. The others are related to grant funding that was received. It's a little more specific for this year. It's a little bit different than we've had in the past. We are actually adding in some areas and reducing in others, and we get to the net reduction of 3. And the biggest increase of those 13 that are added are related to the new property tax software system that is quite outdated and is on its last leg, so it's time to upgrade that, and we need to add some positions for a couple of years to do that. The trend in the 10-year staffing, again, we hit the high water mark back in 2002-03 at about 2,700 and then grew during the boom time from 2004-05 up to about 2007-08. We added back about 100 positions. Since that time, we've eliminated about the 250 or so. In terms of overall service level impacts, relatively minor, and I'll speak to this in more detail, though, when we go through each functional area. There are certainly service level impacts. I don't want to convey that there are not, but relative to other areas, fairly benign. For the second year in a row, we're able to fully allocate the depreciation that's intended to be set aside for building and automation to help replace aging buildings and systems. In prior years, we had been reallocating a portion of that to help balance the budget. We have increased, added back some funding for maintenance. We'd cut back there the last few years, and we're incrementally trying to add back per the 7-year plan. And then roads, and I'll speak again to that in more detail in the land base section, but one he'll accept or he will veto remains to be seen, but nonetheless, if they send something, they'll be paid, which is clearly a priority for some folks. Moving on, you can see how is the governor proposing to balance the budget. About half is cuts. About a third is related to sales and income tax increases that are slated for the November ballot. And then the other 15% are essentially short-term kind of accounting transfers, that sort of thing. What's really important for us at the county is that some of the revenue protections that we had sought as part of the AB 109 realignment but were not included in 2011 are tied to the tax initiative in November. So essentially this would provide guarantee of funding to go along with the additional responsibility. At this point in time, it's subject to the annual budget deliberations. And right now, the governor has included what everybody's agreed upon is a reasonable amount for realignment. Whether or not that makes its way through the legislature remains to be seen at this point. And then the trigger cuts, there's a lot of talk about what happens there if the roughly $5 billion in tax increases are not approved by the voters. What would happen? It would primarily impact schools, K-12, as well as community colleges, CSU, and UC schools. Very little impact to us on the trigger cuts. That being said, what does it mean for us overall? As I mentioned previously, in terms of fiscal impact, it's not that dramatic. We've seen state budgets that were considerably worse for counties. But we're looking at about a $100,000 hit to child support services, redirecting funds away from those services. And this area is evolving, a possible hit to mental health funding due to realignment in the $3 to maybe $500,000 range. But just received word late last week and early this morning that's being reviewed because the hit could be fairly significant to mental health programs statewide. And so there's a lobbying effort going on up there to try to avoid that. Where the cut would come from remains to be seen as obviously an important point of discussion. So those are the real fiscal impacts to the county. The others are really the programmatic impacts. CalWORKS, as we've discussed, major program reductions to CalWORKS, which is really a federal and state program that's administered by counties. We have a very small financial stake in that program, but you know, there's tens of millions of dollars that are spent in the community to support low-income folks to help them as they try to find a job, and that would be cut back in along the lines of 10 to 20% depending on the particular program. And then in-home supportive services, which provides services to the elderly and disabled to keep them in their homes as opposed to being sent to nursing homes or hospitals. There is a 7% across-the-board reduction included in the 12-13 budget, and that's in addition to the 20% cut from last year that was challenged in court and is still pending, but the budget assumes that both the 20% and the 7% would take effect. And then while this doesn't directly impact our operations, the local court is facing significant impacts along the lines of 15 to 20% cut of their budget. And there could be some very real impacts to some of our county departments as well as to citizens. They're looking at possible closures of courts. Some of the specialty courts are looking at revisiting how they operate their filing and computer systems, which would have a huge impact upon our district attorney and probation and sheriff's department if they were to follow through on that. So we're in the phases of working with them to try to identify what this means and what some alternatives are so that we can try to keep things running as smoothly as possible at this point. So to wrap up the overview piece, the recommendations are for your board to review this budget as well as a supplemental budget. Direct staff to come back next week, next Tuesday, with a summary of all of the changes that your board has approved during this week so that we can finalize the proposed budget. And then also to authorize, this is something we've done the last few years, authorize the auditor controller to make loans between funds for cash flow purposes if necessary. And this is really a direct result of the state budget. As they've withheld some payments over time, we've had to do a little shifting for cash flow. We never had to do that prior to the state budget issues. The new fiscal year begins on July 1st. This is what happens after budget hearings. We come back next week. Fiscal year begins July 1st. The auditor then closes the books around early August time frame. At that point, we know the actual fund balance, so the actual amount that's available at the end of the current year for 12-13. Right now, we've just made an estimate, so we'll make some adjustments at that point. And then bring all of those final actions in September to wrap up the budget. And then we'll start in October on the following year's budget. So it really is a continuous cycle. You know, I know Mr. Grant acknowledged everybody. I'd just like to emphasize that as well. I do feel as if we have a very good working relationship here in this county between your board, department heads, our office, and staff at all levels. And that has made this this budget process much easier. I think other counties are not as fortunate as we are to be in that situation. And then as Mr. Seebach noted, Teresa Andrews-Hurlman is here for her first time, and I'd like to acknowledge the work that Andrea McGarvey has done as she is moving on to other things at the end of the year. I believe she is planning for retirement.
Our ability to get that realignment funding. I mean, is it isolated or is it something that's going to be grouped with something else? And I'm not sure if I'm clear on my question, but
I'll try to tackle it. And then I saw Mr. Gibson put his light on. A couple things. It is tied to the November ballot initiative for the tax increase. And so if the tax increase is approved, then our protections are approved. If they're voted down, then we have no protections. It's just subject then to the annual budget process. As far as how the governor's initiative is polling, the polling is that it would approve at this point, but not by a very wide margin. And then there is what's called the Munger Initiative, Molly Munger, who also has a tax increase on the November election, which may complicate things because folks may not want to vote for both. And the governor's really been trying to reach out to her to coordinate the two and get her to drop her initiative, frankly. But she's not agreed to do that at this point, so that could be competing. You know, what we're seeing at this point is that if it fails, there's the $5.5 billion of trigger cuts, which they're stating would come from schools. But that's not guaranteed at this point. That's what the governor's put out there. What worries me is that the cuts are so dramatic to schools that they're going to back off of those and then look to cut elsewhere. And then that's where I think counties could be quite vulnerable.
And that's where the realignment funding could be affected.
Certainly could be. Anything would be fair game at that point.
Well, and I think, does the other initiative include that constitutional guarantee? It does not.
It does not.
Right.
It does not.
So, okay. Did you want to weigh in, Supervisor?
I have no need, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Buckshy stated it perfectly well.
Okay. Supervisor Teixeira, question for Mr. Buckshy?
Yes. Thank you, Chairman Patterson. Dan, with the cutbacks in the courts coming from the state, is there any obligation with realignment and us taking back prisoners and probation, all that kind of stuff, to make the courts somewhat whole in our county?
No. The court is independent. They're an arm of the state,
right,
and they have to deal with that. You know, the challenging part, though, is that depending where the court would head with some reductions, it might be against the grain of where the policy of the state is headed with realignment, to have more specialty courts, to have drug court, mental health court, to have more rehabilitation, which the court is a critical partner. So if they're cutting and moving away potentially from those types of programs when we want to be doing more, and we being the entire state as well as counties want to be doing more of that, that is where the problem lies and the conundrum. So, you know, we're still in the somewhat early phases of working with the court, and we're hoping to reach out to them sooner than later to really work through the details here.
And the court's problem is not only in our entity here in San Luis County, but throughout the state. All the counties are having the same problem, correct?
Yes, I believe so. I don't know what their specific cut targets are, but yes, courts are being hit rather dramatically. And we're trying to gather info, actually, just as of last week through CSAC and through our other peers to find out, you know, what are other local courts doing and how is this being handled?
Very good. Thank you.
Yeah, and I just might add that based on what the court decides to do, it could have impacts on our services that we provide to the courts, the DA, the probation, and the sheriff, that could cause us to have to spend more dollars providing that service, which, of course, we don't want to do. So, as Dan said, we want to get with the courts and see if we can't find some mutual solutions before they make independent decisions without us in the room.
Yes, and I understand that effort has been initiated, and I think it's critical that we work with them to maintain these specialty courts that we've seen the last many years that have been so successful. So I appreciate the fact that admin is already in conversations with our local courts to see how that might play out. Supervisor Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Staying with the 109, should there not be a constitutional protection passed? Obviously, there's still ways for the legislature and governor to provide that themselves, short of an initiative, and I know that we have both the CSAC and others agitating for such, including the Probation Officers Association and the Sheriff's Association. Do we foresee having to start contingency planning in the event that there is no constitutional protection? And considering that we've already put out a lot of money, we've hired new positions. It isn't just that we're providing the services, but we've hired new positions, particularly in the Sheriff's Department and the Probation Department, new employees. I don't know if they were hired. I assume they were obviously hired under the second tier, but I don't know if they were hired under some idea that there wasn't the same kind of safety, or this was somehow contingent upon funding, or I'm not sure how we're going to approach that.
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, at this point, I'd recommend we treat it similar to any other aspect of the state budget, that we track it closely, we see what actually comes about. And, you know, and this is the real concern about how this could play out.
Now, that probably won't happen in the public safety realignment area. They've just cut the deal. We're talking, this is countywide for all 58 counties, including L.A. and San Diego and all the big counties. They're not, my gut feeling is it's not going to happen in that way, that they'll fund that, but they'll find ways to cut other programs. So that's what I'm worried about, is that they'll find a way around to continue to hack away at social services or maybe our health, mental health programs.
Okay.
Supervisor Meacham, another question?
Just one more, if I could.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Chair. Not directly related, but since you brought up our policies, I had a question on our capital project policies, which we have laid out. Typically, our capital projects originate from departments with a specific need. Is that typically, Dan, before they start to adhere to the policies that we've laid out?
Well, that's certainly one area of input. You know, we review various mandates at times require us to build certain projects. We have master plans, needs assessments, you name it, community input all go into that. But, yes, as far as the process goes, here in about a month, actually, we'll be sending out the call to departments for what is it you think you need or want from a capital perspective, and we gather that and look at it with all the other inputs and then evaluate according to this criteria.
And do we do a kind of needs assessment perhaps with some of our partners in the community as well, whether it be cities, other agencies, or nonprofits?
This past year we did more outreach than we've done in the past, frankly, with the Consolidated Infrastructure Plan. Mm-hmm. We reached out to other community service districts, other community service areas, in looking at what are the needs to try to come up with a bigger picture. We're also getting more involved with the economic strategy infrastructure. We're going to discuss more with them for what are the needs.
Okay, because what I'm getting at, I've brought it before, and I'm hoping that we'll be able to revisit it at certain times, which would cross with several of our departments, is and certainly with our agencies, the increasing need for some kind of drug and alcohol treatment programs, residential programs that we lack, that certainly contribute to greater crime, greater incarceration in our jails, greater homelessness, and the nuisance that sometimes accompanies that. So while I know that it's a, you know, our capital projects are ones that are either reactive to problems such as infrastructure resources, et cetera, or overcrowding of our jail, or also taking advantage of certain state or federal grants, I would like to see a greater sense. I know it's a topic that's been discussed before I joined the board, but it seems to be increasingly one that crosses over to a lot of our areas, and I'd like for us to look into. Thank you.
Okay. Supervisor Meacham, followed by Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you. I'm going to drop back to the realignment issue for a moment. And are we at all, can we take a look at the possibility of cost recovery in terms of those that are incarcerated? I mean, just for example, I look at the budget and we see how much money we're spending on food, for example. Well, these folks have to eat whether they're in prison or in jail or not. Why wouldn't they not have to pay for that? I mean, is there any way that we can look at cost recovery from those that are incarcerated that, I mean, kids go to school, they pay at the cafeteria. Why would somebody in jail not pay for that? So I don't know if there's any way that we can look at cost recovery efforts from that standpoint.
Well, we can take a look at that. A lot of this is just by law. You cannot do certain things with the jail inmates. For instance, health care is one that I've always been interested in, and if somebody had health insurance, why couldn't we use that?
Right.
And we're prohibited by law in that regard. And I believe it's probably the same thing on the food part of it, but we can certainly take a look and try to be creative on it, but I'm not hopeful that we'll get too far with it.
Well, I mean, if the governor is really looking for ways to address this whole issue, and if the law precludes certain things like that from happening, I'm wondering if there might be legislation introduced to change that law, but just trying to find ways that we can address the
Yeah, I think it's worth taking a look at. Certainly the court can require restitution for crimes committed to the victims, but I don't know if that'll carry over to to jail time. But anyway, something to follow up on, certainly. Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That was a question I wanted to revisit when we get to the Public Defender's Budget Fund Center. It appears that the amount that we've been able to recoup there has not met what we originally thought, and I'd at the right time be interested in our experience there. I think that's going to spill over to issues like that in the jail, and I guess as I look at it, I believe he's firm on that. The legislature, on the other hand, is very much the wild card here, but I think our State Association of Counties and the CAO's Association have stepped up in a way that puts us in the best possible place that we can be. Mr. Grant alluded very briefly to a formula, a deal that the 58 counties, working through nine CAOs that were locked in an undisclosed location somewhere, to figure out how is the realignment pot to be divided between the counties. And as you can imagine, in the diversity of counties, that's no small question. Given we have counties from 10.5 million people population in LA to about 1,800 in Alpine County, all with the same responsibilities. So as I understand it, those negotiations have come with a formula agreed upon for the next 2 years. Not everyone is completely happy, which is perhaps a mark that they're where they are going to land. But it's my understanding through CSAC that carries power, as they say, across the street in the legislature, because the legislature, various dynamics of the legislature, seeing that kind of agreement coming from those most directly affected, I think it puts us in the best possible position. That said, much is riding on the November ballot initiative that Mr. Grant indicated could totally scramble the table on this. Between the constitutional amendments, the need to make appropriate investments in the school, there's really quite a broad coalition behind that. The Sheriff's Association, the Probation Officers Association, California School Boards Association, all very supportive of the governor's proposal moving forward. We're going to hear a lot more about that as we move into the summer and the fall. But I think we're in an uncertain situation, but there are a lot of people working very hard to secure this program, which I think overall folks realize is the right way for the future. So stay tuned, I guess, is the best advice at this point.
Very good. Thank you. If those of you listening didn't pick up on the fact, Supervisor Gibson is the board's representative to the California State Association of Counties and has the opportunities to really follow what they're doing as a professional organization and how those negotiations are going. So thank you for that update, Supervisor Gibson. Mr. Buckshy, do you actually have a presentation for each of the functional areas as we proceed?
I do. What I'd recommend is that we have a public comment for the overview, and then after that I can give a brief overview of each functional area and then hand it to your board at that point.
Very good. Thank you. So the first functional area that we'll be discussing this morning is called the land-based budgets, and as Mr. Grant mentioned earlier, that includes the Agricultural Commissioner, Planning and Building, and Public Works, and subsections under those. If you do want to speak to any of those items, please do give us a request to speak form. And Mr. Brown, I'm not clear exactly what you want to speak to. If it's not one of those, that's fine, but I do need some clarity on that.
Mr. Chair, the first section that you just went over, the general budget presentation, is what I'd like to speak to.
Okay, so we're actually behind the curve on this, then. You want to speak to the overall budget?
The overall budget.
Okay, why don't you go ahead and do that then at this point?
Thank you very much. That's great that you got the ICMA budget award, and I hope you extend that and join the ICMA Center for Performance Measurement and send Mr. Buckshy to the meetings, and then maybe Mr. Grant could be on the board of that consortium, and that would put you in a great place. We think that in addition to the functional areas that you're going to be talking about today, you ought to have one on revenues that's broken out. And probably along those lines, page E14, it's one of the blue pages in the back, is really important because it begins to break down the critical revenues. And we think that the important things here, of course, revenues are the overall governing factor in the budget. The secured property tax is flat to down. The supplemental property tax declines. And that's an important leading indicator because it says what's going to happen to the property tax in the future, barring some anomalies. The property new dwelling units had been permitted in the entire unincorporated county in the first three quarters of the year. Solar plant construction revenue, again, you're showing $1.3 million. You had projected a 17 to 20. I don't know where the rest is. This budget covers the first half of that three-year construction period, so when you get to June 30th and so on. And then there's quite a bit of discussion here about closing the budget gap, essentially attrition, letting the staffing level of 2007-08 float down by 200.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Brown. And Mr. Buckshy, do you want to answer the question regarding the revenue from the solar projects and how that's come in and how that'll be dispersed over time?
Yeah, certainly. You know, the construction is underway. To date, we've received about $670,000. Anticipate maybe getting a couple hundred more by the end of the fiscal year here in the next couple weeks. What we budgeted for is we only budgeted the amount equal to the expense that was added for the sheriff, fire, and code enforcement operations that are out there, which is about the $1.3 million. The rest we are going to receive as revenue, and we'll place it into a reserve and designation for future use. As you know, that you know, these projects are to be built in 2 to 3 years is the rough estimate, maybe a little bit longer. So that's the only period in time in which we'll receive that. So we're essentially treating that as one-time revenue. We're not planning to use it at this point for ongoing expenditures. So for the first few years, however long we have the fire, sheriff, and code enforcement, the additional resources, that funding will be used to pay for that. And whatever is left after all that activity is done could then be used for some one-time projects.
Very good. Thank you for that. And I do have another request to speak on this functional area. Mr. Eric Greening, you wanted to speak on roads.
Yes, thank you. Land-based budgets, if we're there. I do have one question on page C41. It says, quote, road impact fee revenue is increasing by $1.3 million, or 273%, primarily due to budgeting for the Willow Road interchange. And my question comes to the, as you know, recently the voters there turned down a particular financing plan for a state water connection, and in response to that, the CSD ceased processing the will serve letters that were in the queue for immediate processing. They are also considering a moratorium on further will serve letters. And since the repayment and payment, you know, some of the repayment of bonds already sold and just payment for this interchange structure is dependent on new development, what is the status of this budget area and the Willow Road interchange in the event that building slows or halts for a period while they find out some other way to deal with, quite frankly, a water supply that won't support the building unless something is done. And, of course, there's an object lesson here that when we're looking at transportation decisions, we shouldn't forget water issues, and when we're looking at water decisions, we shouldn't forget transportation issues. They are all interlinked. The vulnerable piece of the Willow Road Interchange is its dependence on future development, for which the water supply does not presently exist. And it may be, and I'm hoping for some clarification, we'll find out that the flow of cash for it won't exist if the water supply doesn't exist. Thank you.
Yes, very good. Thank you for bringing that issue forward, Mr. Greening. I'll close it to general public comment. Mr. Greening's request to speak was the only one received for this item, and I would ask Public Works if there's a representative from Public Works that would like to address that Willow Road Interchange funding question raised by Mr. Greening.
Certainly, Chairman Patterson, members of the board, Pavel Ogre, and Public Works Director. That item in the budget is actually the result of good news. It's money that's already been collected and is in the traffic impact fee funds and therefore available to transfer to the project in lieu of some of the funding that had originally been anticipated from the general fund. There is no long-term debt service for the county associated with Willow Road, and so there is no long-term dependency on development in the Napomo area for that particular project. When your board approved it, there was an allocation of internal financing from the general fund that was anticipated.
Governed special districts, and we do have that additional document as well. In terms of service level impacts, roads pavement management rating is still lower than what we would like to target of 70. Funding, however, this year is increased slightly from the general fund from about $5.8 million to $5.9 million. And this is a, you know, a reversal of a trend where we had been cutting several million a year for the last few years. And I'll come back to roads in just a minute with a little bit more detail. The Agricultural Commissioner's Office, we have received, again, I think it's either the second or third year, an exemption so that we may continue to receive the gas tax, the unclaimed gas tax. And the way that works is there was legislation that was passed a few years ago that states that the level of general fund must be held steady over basically a five-year average, or counties could be at risk of losing the unclaimed gas tax, which is, I think, $1.5 million or so, or a couple million bucks. However, there is an exemption process for economically challenging times. Our county is one of several, I think maybe a third or half of the counties are receiving an exemption at this point, and so we're in good shape as far as the unclaimed gas tax goes. We will continue to receive that. Just wanted to point out, I think this has become standard operating procedure expectation at this point. There is no Williamson Act funding. We used to receive about $1 million a year. This is the second or third year now in which we will not receive that from the state. Coming back to roads, I just wanted to highlight here some comparison counties. These are some counties that have some similar demographics or nearby, and those which we could get some data on the amount of general fund that are spent on their roads. So as you can see here, while we have cut back, we used to be in the 8 to 10 million range from the general fund for roads. We're at about 6 now. We're still outspending these five other comparator counties by a considerable margin. And so I don't know if their roads are in worse shape or what the case is, but nonetheless, your board has committed to a higher level of general fund, at least compared to these. Do you want to note, as you see here, Santa Barbara and Sonoma County are what are called self-help counties. That means that they have passed a tax locally in support of infrastructure and roads, which is something similar to what SLOCOG was looking at earlier, but the polling that for a sales tax initiative that would support roads and other infrastructure, but the polling came back negative, so they decided not to pursue that. But you can see the benefit here, certainly in Santa Barbara and Sonoma is quite a bit bigger than we are, is that they're spending quite a bit less on general fund. And overall, they're probably spending more on their roads because of the self-help component. So we are at a bit of a disadvantage from a roads funding perspective by not being a self-help county. And that is all I have on the land-based piece.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Buckshy. Mr. Brown, you just submitted a request to speak on land-based, which is this. Yes. This is. We were taking public comment prior to board action, so I'll let you go ahead and speak. We've closed public comment, but go ahead and speak to this. And if you have future functional areas, please get your request to speak in advance.
Very good. Thank you. The
planning and development budget or planning and building department budget on C-12 and C-13 list the work program, and on C-13 it lists a couple of generalities, plan development and agricultural subdivisions. And of course, at the beginning of this calendar year, when the board started the year, you talked about implementing the provisions of the EnergyWise plan, or so-called climate action plan. You have a number of other things on the list that are going on that are pertinent to regulation and intensifying the entire scheme of control and making things more difficult. We've talked about some of those in the past. And so on C-10, you're basically reducing the general fund contribution to this department slightly, but it's still maintaining this broad array of regulatory initiatives and the ability to carry them out along with some of the grants that you get under sustainable communities, which, as we pointed out, was really money that was for water projects that got put in the big water fund in 2007 or 2008. So we would hope that you would consider shifting some of the precious and ever more precious local discretionary general fund dollars, which come from the property tax, sales tax, general sales tax, and TOT, to other services, whether it be roads or safety, and
which would have repealed AB 32, and the public is in support of that effort. So thank you for your comments, and I'll bring it back to the board and ask my colleagues if they want to speak to this item. And I have a request from Supervisor Hill.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dan, on the Community Development Fund Center, which is 290, where the EVC is funded from, I know that EVC, Mr. Manchak, got in a request for increased funding after our budget. The question is where next? I know some of the funding that they're requesting to continue the economic development project and associated measures, including working with planning on the economic element update, we found some WIB funding for. I wonder if you could comment further.
Yeah, two pieces related to that. The EVC has requested about $27,000 to help with basically economic impact studies related to permit applications. And we were looking potentially for Workforce Investment Board, or what's called WIB funding, and I just recently found out that it may not be available, as we had previously thought. In addition, the EVC has asked for about $18,000 for its general operations, and that's what the $80,000 that is included in community development goes towards, is a basic county contribution subsidy, if you will, towards their bottom line, and they've requested an additional $18,000. What we discussed in light of the more recent information about the lack of WIB funds, if you will, is to work with Mr. Manchak from the EVC over here over the next few weeks or months to get a few more details on what the $18,000 would be used for, impacts, that sort of thing, and then come back to your board at a later date to consider various options for both of those.
Okay. And I would, you know, that's one of the areas, obviously, that doesn't, I guess we don't evaluate ourselves because it's an out-of-house agency, but I guess I would make a case that if we were to evaluate the EVC, what it's doing now, how it's interacting with the county, with the community, and a variety of projects that they're doing now as opposed to a few years back, we would probably find measurable results and satisfaction that would definitely be higher than previously. And so I want to look at that. I mean, obviously, I'm a board member, and so I have some direct desire to help continue the project and to continue the EVC funding, but I do think that, and I know staff's been really helpful, and you've been one of the staff people who've been critical in working with the EVC folks and the cluster folks from the project, but that might be, you know, at a time that we come back, if the board's asked to look at additional funding, that we do look at the amount of work that the EVC is doing now and the contributions to the county and its mission and its citizens, as opposed to perhaps, say, 4 years ago when the operating funds started to get cut as the deficit had to be closed and everybody had to take a 5% cut each year. So that's just a recommendation to look at that necessarily. Okay. Thank you.
We're good. Thank you, Mr. Hill. Any further comments, Mr. Buckshot, on that? No? Okay. The process, then, as we move forward, is to take each functional area one at a time and then act on that tentatively before we move on. So I have no further questions or comments from my colleagues on the board, so I'll ask for a tentative motion to approve the land-based budget.
So moved as modified by the supplemental document.
Okay. Is there a second? Okay. Mr. Teixeira, seconds. And we can take this with a voice vote as it is a tentative motion.
Mr. Chair, if I could, I'd like to abstain on Fund Center 290. Other than that, we'll support all. Just an abstention on 290.
Okay, and that's the community development.
Please. Thank you.
Fund Center, so... all in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion carries with Supervisor Hill's comment. And the next functional area up is public protection, but we're going to take a 15-minute break and reconvene at 10:50 to take up the public protection budget.
This budget we got the final motion.
Meeting. Please take your seats and we'll get underway with our budget hearing, and I'm going to ask Mr. Buckshy to give his presentation on the public protection budget, and then we'll open it to public comment on public protection. Mr. Buckshy.
Okay, thank you. Just from a very high-level overview on a numbers perspective, public protection comprises about a quarter of the overall budget. Same is true for number of positions at about 700. And about 2.5 positions are slated for elimination in the proposed budget. Some service level impacts, and most of these are good news. As I mentioned, the level of general fund support is being held flat for fire, sheriff, probation, and district attorney operations. Fire was able to look at its budget and shift some resources around and is pleased to be able to increase the staffing at Creston Fire to full-time. It used to only be staffed either 3 or 4 days a week, and now that is full-time. And Station 12, which is basically by the headquarters off of Highway 1 here in San Luis Obispo. As you may recall, last year, this station is what's called an Amador station, which means the state staffs it during fire season, and then the county pays to have that staff stay during the winter. And we were going to cut back due to budgetary issues last year and cut back the county funding during the wintertime. And the state was able to back off some of its charges, CAL FIRE was, to be able to keep that open. So that's good news. We do have some expanded fire services this year. We spoke about AB 109 already, and we spoke about the solar farms with the increased staffing for fire and sheriff there as well. That was done in the current year a few months ago, but it continues into the 12-13 fiscal year. Emergency services, if you read through that budget, you'll see there are a number of budget augmentation requests there as well. Relatively low dollar amount and heavily leveraged federal funding, a small amount of general fund, to do some additional planning for folks with special needs. This was one of the findings in Hurricane Katrina. The evacuation of folks with special needs was certainly less than optimal, and so there's an additional planning going on around the country to do a better job at that. Update the local hazard mitigation plan, increase tsunami readiness, and additional storm response planning are all included. These, again, are all enhancements to current programs. And then lastly, for the public protection piece and waste management, there's an augmentation there to increase resources for stormwater management, which is a federal mandate that we need to carry out in order to try to comply with those mandates. We're adding some resources there as we'd fallen behind a bit. And that concludes my overview of public protection.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Buckshy. Any questions to Mr. Buckshaw on this before I open it to public comment? Mr. Gibson?
Just a couple clarifications in a couple different fund centers. First, contributions to court operations, Fund Center 103 on C-57. You had referenced potential draconian cuts to the court's budgets. Maybe for my benefit and that of the public, could you talk just a little bit about what this fund center does and why we're actually showing money coming into our general fund at this point?
Yeah, there's a couple of things related to this. A number of years back, the courts were part of county organizations, and they were split, I believe, in the mid to late 90s from counties statewide. As a result, counties were obligated to continue to pay a certain amount of money to help fund those. An MOE, maintenance of effort, essentially, to fund that. On the flip side, on the revenue piece, counties receive a portion of the fines that are paid for various types of infractions that the court handles, and those are distributed. Some go to the local court, some go to the state, some go to counties, and so that is what we contract for these services. We do not have a public defender department or staff. The administrative office oversees the contracts of our various agencies that carry those out. So a couple of things that have happened over the last few years is that, one, the number of referrals has dropped a bit, so that's driven things down. Secondly, we think there's been some impact because of the economy. Less folks are able to pay. It's those that, that is an important point, is those we provide those services are free of charge in instances for those who are unable to pay, not unwilling to pay. So if folks do have the means to pay, then we try to do that. The third component is that we did change the methodology in which the fees are applied to misdemeanor and felony cases based upon estimates of the type of case. And quite frankly, we've received some less revenue since that policy change went into effect as
well.
So
it's more a fixed cost kind of thing as opposed to an hourly charge to defendants.
It's a way to look at it, yeah.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Thank you. I have no further questions at this point, so I'll open it to the public. And I have one request to speak on public protection, and that's Mr. Brown.
The fire budget is interesting and I think raises some general questions. First of all, it indicates that there's 95 and a half FTEs, and even though this is a contract department and its workforce belongs to the state and not the county, I think it would be helpful to show the staffing in some detail. to get an idea of, you know, how it's deployed and so forth, because, you know, the a lot of the departments didn't have very much in the way of budget augmentation requests, but this one does, and a couple of three of the items actually go to the delivery of actual field emergency services there, and it's sort of hard to gauge what's going on. So I think it would be interesting to know. So, for example, they ask for I guess it's a battalion chief or an assistant chief position. Just what is the deployment out there at 3 a.m. or something in terms of the supervision? And so it would be helpful to gauge that. And as we said, you know, the budget makes quite a point of the reduction of about 200 staffers otherwise in the county over 5 or 6 years here. And one question is, and it isn't discussed here, is what's the normal vacancy rate in these agencies? So you have a budgeted, funded set of positions, but typically with turnover and so forth, what is that float actually worth? And we were wondering in some of these agencies and maybe the county as a whole, does that 200 reduction actually reflect managing turnover, and as you say, having a chill that you didn't refill them? So it, particularly in this budget, it would be helpful if we could see how many staffers there are, what the ranks are. You want to manage that, look at rank creep, see what they're doing and so forth, and then some explanation of where they're deployed, since it's a field-based force. You have some response time data, but it could be a little more specific.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Brown. That concludes my request to speak on this item, so I'll bring it back to my colleagues on the board for any follow-up questions or comments. Supervisor Meacham?
I don't have any comments. I'm ready to make a tentative motion.
Okay, very good. Any other?
I'm ready to second such a motion.
Supervisor Meacham?
I'll move tentative approval on this
public protection.
Second.
Okay, moved by Supervisor Meacham, seconded by Supervisor Gibson, and I just want to comment before we actually call for that motion. I want to thank Sheriff Parkinson and Chief Lewin for their efforts working with the administrative staff and providing the additional funding to the Carrizo Plain area and California Valley as a result of the two large solar projects out there and the new fire station that we have in Creston and the improved staffing that we have in Creston that will certainly benefit all residents of the eastern part of San Luis Obispo County. So I know you...
Or prevent recidivism and so forth from those, because I know that your departments have to keep a fair number of statistics, so didn't want to put you on the spot here, so I figured I would just let you know that if we give a call, this is what we're calling for. Thank
yes,
you.
Yes, and if we could add mental health to that
mental
column
well.
Of...
behavioral health, right.
Qualifiers too. That would be good. So, Supervisor Gibson.
I think it's worthwhile to point out that those issues, being part of the public protection law enforcement discussion, really reflects well on this particular functional area and the departments that comprise it. This county has been well ahead of the curve in doing things such as realignment in visions, where we do an integrated set of services. I point with considerable pride and satisfaction to our work on anti-gang issues, where probation, DA, and sheriffs are all working very closely in different way, in a different approach to dealing with this. I would also, as a technical matter, suggest the motion be amended to include the modifications of the supplemental document.
Very, very good.
So
thank
the
you.
Clerk doesn't.
Right. I was
get
about
riled.
To point that out. Supervisor Meacham, you wanted to comment as well.
Just quickly, and I know it's a little early. to get the statistical information relative to realignment, because we haven't been in it that long. But yeah. I will be really curious to see if we have a decrease in population in our state prisons, does that mean that there is an increase in crime? I'm anxious to see those that data. And I will move with the suggested amendment.
Okay, very good. Thank you. And all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. And we will move on with our Health and Human Services functional area. Mr. Buckshot.
Moving on to Health and Human Services, as previously noted, this comprises just under 40% of the overall budget, about 838 positions in this functional area, and a net addition of one position is proposed. Looking at health agency, some of the resources that were cut back a year ago for the Children's Assessment Center, Martha's Place, are added back, and that's largely a result of additional federal funding. There is some additional grant funding that's included for drug and alcohol treatment, which is good news, several hundred thousand dollars. And just, you know, along the lines of some of the concerns that your board just noted in public safety related to realignment, we are seeing some increased costs in jail medical, which is partially driven by the public safety realignment. That's not a huge surprise. We knew there would be some cross there, but in some instances, you know, it's a little different type of inmate there, and there have been some differing medical trends, so we're keeping a close eye on that. Our public health folks are keeping a close eye on that. With respect to social services, did just want to highlight that the two positions that were allocated towards homelessness during the current year are continued in 12-13. Social services made some room in its budget to support those. So hopefully be looking to fill the program manager position relatively soon. I know that interviews have been underway. I'm not quite sure where that, if they made a final decision, but I know they're close. And then just wanted to highlight, although we spoke about it again, this is where we will see dramatic changes if the governor's budget were adopted as proposed. We would be coming back to revisit CalWORKs and in-home supportive services, as it would impact social services very directly. Just wanted to highlight that, and that concludes my overview.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Buckshy. Questions or comments from members of the board?
I do have a question.
Yes, Supervisor Meacham.
This is a question more on the veteran services. I think I see Dana is here. I would be curious to know the increase in services that needed to be provided, the increase in numbers that we're seeing. I know that we're going to have even more so probably in this next year. And I know that your department is pretty thin in terms of your staffing. So what are you seeing, Dana, in terms of your impact to your department?
Well, we are seeing an increase in the number of veterans coming home, especially with the drawdowns in the different military units. We should see more veterans coming back in the next few years. They're saying about a 15% increase in the number of veterans. Also, we're seeing a large increase in the number of older veterans and their families coming in for help with assistance in the homes and stuff like that. So that, at the moment, tends to be our largest block of veterans services going out is for aging veterans and their families.
I guess one of the things that is of concern to me is, and I've heard it in other areas, I know you guys are doing a great job here, but the time in which the responses to once a person puts in an application or once they go through the process for services to be provided, it takes a long time sometimes to get that accomplished. You guys are doing pretty well.
I do expect an increase in the time delays.
I think it's important, and this is kind of a precursor to looking into next year's budget. I mean, we're going to have a much more impact to your department, I think, because of the increase. And I don't want to see the process slowed down in terms of claims to these folks that are coming home. So whatever we have to do to adjust that, I'm going to be looking into that. So thanks for what you're doing.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you. Yes, Supervisor Hill.
I'd like to follow up on Supervisor Meacham, if I could. Thank you, Supervisor Meacham. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dana, do we have a way of being able to track and anticipate how many of our service men and women actually are going to be returning here to our county and therefore in need of services, assistance, et cetera?
I mean, yeah, we are actually trying to get that information from the DOD and get them to release those numbers of the veterans that are coming back by working through the recruiter's office and stuff, because they do track all those numbers and where veterans are returning to.
Right.
And generally speaking, you know, most vets do return back to their home of origin. So we're in hopes that we'll start getting those numbers. Once again, every government entity out there in the country is doing the same thing we're trying to do, so they are bogged down in getting the information, but we're actively trying to get that.
Well, let us know if we can help out with obtaining that information or helping to outreach to our congressional representatives.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you. Mr. Cummings, a few weeks ago I was able to attend a breakfast for veterans, and you were there along with Congresswoman Capps, asking veterans for input on issues that they were having. And I'm curious, I want to echo Supervisor Hill's comments that if there are things that we can do to better serve our local veterans in terms of contacting our federal legislators and improving the system at that end, and I appreciate what you're doing here to expedite the processing as best you can, but we want to see that our returning veterans are adequately serviced. And it was my understanding from Congresswoman Capps that she, too, is working on efforts to ensure that veteran services are provided. So can you comment on anything that we might do at this juncture other than just tracking or staying in touch with you that needs to be done to improve services?
Well, I think that Congresswoman Capps and has been doing an exceptional job at helping out the veterans of our community and having an open-door policy for when a veteran needs more assistance, either through our office or directly. She's been instrumental in getting things done, along with Congressman McCarthy's office as well, working with some of the local veterans. At this point in time, I think tracking is probably the most essential thing to do at the moment. And then as we have issues come up, if we need to run it through the channel, through the board, I would love the opportunity to use you guys as a resource.
Very good.
To further needs.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Any further questions among my colleagues? I see none. I'll open it to the public, but have no request to speak in this area, so I'll bring it back to my colleague, Supervisor Bishop.
And, Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to comment before we get to a motion. Appreciate, especially in this functional area, the work of the health agency, working particularly with the issues of Martha's Place. It's a very committed group there that is promoting a very important program. And the ability to be creative and flexible and take advantage of every opportunity to sustain that program is much appreciated. I can imagine that former Supervisor Bianchi and her daughter Mary are listening as to this on behalf of them and the crew at Martha's Place. We're grateful that we can keep moving forward on that good program.
Very good. Thank you, Supervisor Gibson. And I want to take a moment to thank both Jeff Hamm of the Health Agency and Lee Collins of Social Services for their efforts to improve services to our homeless population and move forward with programs that will address those issues. So with that, I'll seek a motion.
I'll move tentative approval of the Health and Human Services functional area as modified by the supplemental document.
Very good. Can I have a second, please?
Second.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded to tentatively approve the Health and Human Services budget as amended by the supplemental document. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion carries. Thank you. And we will carry on with the community services budget, and hopefully we'll get through that and then break for a closed session and reconvene at 1:30. So let's move on to community services and Mr. Buckshot.
Okay, community services, the brief overview is you can incrementally utilize some of the reserves similar to what we've done with our overall plan for overall county operations. Two positions eliminated. Again, they are vacant there as well. Parks, similar approach, no reduction to general fund here. It does appear on the surface that there would be three positions eliminated or added to Parks, but it's actually a transfer. Some of the grounds operations that resided within Fund Center 113, the general services budget, are transferred to Parks as they actually have worked more closely with Parks operations. That was really an operational change. It's not a policy or programmatic change whatsoever. And then there is some additional funding allocated for maintenance this year at the Coastal Dunes Park and a few other projects to move some of that along as compared to prior years. And that concludes my overview for community services.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Buckshaw. Questions, comments from the board? Supervisor Meacham.
I have a question in regard to golf courses. When it mentions in the department comments that three courses are experiencing similar hardships while reaching for the goal of providing affordable golfing options. And I've been made aware of from three different folks about a letter that went out that we're going to be offering free golf for ladies on different days. This seems to be counterproductive to trying to keep revenues going when we're offering free golf. So I don't quite understand that concept.
Good morning, Chair and members of the board. Curtis Black, your Deputy Director for County Parks. The promotions and marketing that we do for both parks and for golf, in particular, the question was golf, are really working together to actually increase the participation and the revenues. Some of them would seem a little extreme, but our market, our general marketplace in golf, does require some a little bit of thinking outside the box, a little bit of new territory that we're in. We are doing, we did announce that this was Women's Golf Month in our county golf courses, and we've already seen quite a great response. Now, it's not an entire month of absolutely free golf. We have the regular scheduled tournaments, club activities, all of that's going at the standard prices. But during the regular hours, if some new golfer comes up, a lady comes up, she will get to play for free. And we've seen this stimulate our golf play and our revenues both throughout this past about 14 months. We've been working hard on promoting. You recall we've been working with the Visitor Conference Bureau. We did a great activity at Savor. We had a recent activities at the Outdoor Discovery Festival. We've been here at the farmers market about four times this year. We've been working differently than folks have worked in the past, and we've actually seen our golf revenue come restore back to where we're projecting even better than what's here, which we had to project early. We're likely to actually exceed our target for golf revenues this year, including this new promotion that we've got going. So thank you for your question, but it appears that these folks are working together in the right direction.
I'll be anxious to see the numbers. That seems okay. Counterproductive to me, but
yeah,
hope it works.
Other questions for golf while I'm here?
I have a question for airport.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Black.
Thank you.
That's it. Supervisor Hill, you have a question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could have Mr. Howell, our airport manager, just briefly, if I could get a quick update from you, Richard. I know that parking is a big source of our revenue at the airport, and we do have our new system in place now for a little more than a month.
Just about.
I think originally you had projected when it came before us to move forward on this plan that we hope to see about a 15% increase. I wondered if an early trend is showing that is an increase we may meet.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Richard Howell, General Manager, sir, that's correct. We are seeing revenue trends of 15%, sometimes a little bit higher. We've been watching it. Our daily take, if you will, on parking is going up in a nice, healthy manner. We're very encouraged by what we're seeing. We think the system is very intuitive for the customers. They know how to operate it. They don't seem to be having any trouble operating it. We really have eliminated a lot of the issues that we had in the parking lot function, revenue function, whereas people were incorrectly calculating parking because it was all done by hand and done manually. So we are seeing a healthy turn of events for parking. The budget you see here today, of course, didn't have those forecasts in it. And so as we go into the next fiscal year with our our quarterly reports, we'll be able to update you then.
Okay. Yeah, we'll look forward to the quarterly reports to see that we're going to get. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Howell. Thank you, Supervisor Hill. And I'll open it to public comment on this item, and I do have a request to speak, Mr. Greening.
About themselves and know, and statewide and within this county, they use a tiny, tiny fraction of the resources that go to other forms of education and are absolutely vitally important. In fact, the discourse that happens in this room and among other public servants and in other governing bodies depends on access to real information, the ability of the people, all of the people, to research things, become conversant in topics new to them, topics of rising concern. So I would just like to put in a plug that libraries are something that we have just kind of kept going as well as we can on a level of simmer, just to sort of keep them alive on a basic level. And they deserve and need far more than that. The quality of our democracy, the quality of our civilization depends on it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. I'll close it to public comment and ask Mr. Reynolds for clarification on the issue that Mr. Greening raised regarding services. We did see that there are two positions being eliminated, yet service levels are going to stay the same as they currently are. So could you speak to
Thank
that?
Thank you, Chair Patterson. Brian Reynolds, Library Director, Honorable Board, members of the audience. What Eric said is true, but also what I'm going to tell you is also true, that our budgeting and our staffing patterns of all the branches, I think, are stable and are going to start getting better. It's true that we're down about 10 positions from what we were several years ago, but by working smarter and using volunteers, Mr. Meacham was a big advocate of that, and I think we've satisfied some of those things. I think we've turned the corner on that, and within 5 years, our budget should be to the point where we're not using reserves anymore, and I'm counting on the real estate market to slowly inch its way up, which will mean our main source of revenues will be higher than they have been. The state has taken all of our money away. We hope some comes back, but it seems like they can't hurt us anymore. I mean, you can't get less than zero. Finally, I would say that what is most encouraging isn't just our use levels, but the advocacy that people have for their libraries, despite all odds. And I would include especially Cambria and Atascadero, the communities there, raising millions of dollars for a new library. Morro Bay is going to be expanding with a remodel. Templeton is also active. So to me, the future looks brighter than it has in recent years, and I'm optimistic. Unless you have any other questions.
No, thank you for that update. Supervisor Mitchell.
No, just you made the comment that they can't take more than zero. Hang on to your wallet. I mean,
I haven't dealt with the governor's job before.
Thank you.
Yeah, and Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that we're getting a strategic plan on libraries. They are indispensable. They must endure and they must thrive if we're to have the kind of community and county that we aspire to. I guess I'm interested in continuing to work. No, I don't guess. I know I'm interested in continuing to work with the admin office on the question of what amounts to a library pain plan. We're lucky to have reserves that can be tapped. We have to be exceptionally prudent in doing that. And I would appreciate continued updates as to how we do that and how we stabilize and start to grow the library program again. And I think the other observation is that the libraries are doing as well as they are because they have extraordinary support within the communities that they serve. And this has struck me from the day I took office that there's no more passionate bunch of advocates than the friends groups that we have out there, and I appreciate their work with the Library Foundation and the volunteers who may or may not be associated with either of those two entities. So we'll look forward to keeping this going. I do hope we've turned the corner, and we're looking to pull off the remarkable feat of two new library branches in the foreseeable future, and should when that occurs, we'll have reason to celebrate. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Supervisor Gibson, and I want to weigh in just briefly on libraries as well. And as has been pointed out, we have tremendous support from our communities in maintaining library services and expanding library services. And Mr. Greening made reference to declining budgets for schools. And in my smaller communities in my district, the libraries already serve an instrumental part in educating children. They are linked with the schools in those communities and those school children agenda. So I'd like to press on and see if we can get more of these functional areas addressed. We'll move on to the fiscal and administrative budgets. Mr. Buckshy.
Okay. Fiscal and administrative, as you can see, similar to the prior functional area, a much smaller portion of the budget at about 5%. There is a net increase of 6.5 positions proposed, and I'll speak to that in just a moment here. As you can see, as previously discussed earlier in the presentation, we're moving into phase two of the new property tax software system. Our current system is at least 20 or 25 years old, maybe older than that. I've lost track. And there is a net proposal for a net increase of 7.5 positions for those areas to support that program. That's in the auditor's controller's office, the treasurer's office, and the assessor's office combined. Those positions would be limited term for about 2.5 years, which is the projected time frame to implement the new system. And I do want to underscore the importance of this system. We've been looking for years for alternatives and think we've come up with the best solution currently available. Some of the other service level highlights, we do retain our ability for processing the tax roll within the assessor's office, and we do retain our ability to conduct internal audits in the auditor controller's office, which is imperative that we continue to do that. And that concludes my overview.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Buckshy. And I'll ask my colleagues if they have any questions. I see none. I'll open it to the public, yet have no request to speak from the public, so I'll close it and bring it back to my colleagues for a motion or discussion.
I'll move to approve the fiscal and administrative portion of the budget.
Okay. Second. Okay. It's been moved and seconded that we approve the fiscal and administrative budgets. There are no supplemental budget changes, so all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. We'll move on to support to county departments. Mr. Buckshy.
PowerPoint, please. All right. Support to county departments, about 6% of the total budget. And as you can see here, six positions are proposed for reduction. Actually, three of those are the transfer that I previously spoke to from general services to parks. So the net reduction is actually only three. Some of the impacts for county council, there is funding for an attorney last year included a position that was unfunded. The funding is allocated this year. It does include the phase out of the reprographics operation. You know, we've discussed this throughout the current year. That business is down about 40%, and it's really no longer a viable operation. The idea is to phase it out at the end of this fiscal year. There are two employees remaining, and the idea is to try to find them alternative positions within the next year in order to avoid any type of layoff there. And then there is an additional new request here for $50,000 for legal support to support the Civil Service Commission. It's been more expensive than it has in the past. And with that, that concludes my overview.
Very good. Thank you. And I'll ask my colleagues if they have any questions of Mr. Buckshy or others on this item. I see none, so I'll open it to the public, but have no request to speak from the public. So we'll close public comment and bring it back to the board.
There is one, actually a question that occurred to me, and I realized I didn't have time to research it. It's on fleet services. We had talked on efficiencies in regards fleet services, both in terms of purchasing the necessary parts and supplies that we need to keep our fleet moving. The possibility of other than owning the physical fleet, and fuel efficiency, which should play into our EnergyWise plan. And I was wondering if General Services had any comments as to things that are moving forward along those lines with regards to our fleet.
Good morning, Chairman Patterson, members of the board. I'm Katie Perez with General Services. And regarding your questions for our fleet services, there's a couple of areas we're moving forward on that. We are completing a new policy regarding fuel efficiency so that instead of looking at each vehicle on an ad hoc basis, we have an overall policy that guides us when we can bring on a fuel-efficient vehicle, whether it's a hybrid, whether it's whatever type of fuel efficiency. So that would give us a more standardized approach to it. We are very open to that, and we're finding that the market is beginning to really support that, so it begins to make financial sense as well as operational sense. We are taking steps to right-size our fleet. Every time there's a request for a vehicle, there's a strong discussion on, do you really need this vehicle? How will you use it? We're looking at encouraging departments to turn in underutilized vehicles whenever possible. We haven't truly explored the last item that Supervisor Gibson
mentioned. How long it would take to pay the additional cost of an electric vehicle over a typical fossil fuel, whether it be CNG or gasoline or whatever. And it was a straight across cost per gallon of fuel versus cost to charge the vehicle, et cetera. Are you in that policy that you spoke of, including the environmental impact of the emissions and the cost, the savings based on the greenhouse gas productions? Is there any of that, the environmental benefit calculated in that assessment, or is it just strictly the cost savings based on the difference in fuel type?
We really like to take a holistic view. Mm-hmm. It's not just dollars and cents. I'd like to think of it as the total cost of ownership of a vehicle. So we're looking at all of the factors rather than just the dollars and cents.
Very good. Thank you. I think that's the way it should be done. So thank you for that. Oh, excuse me. Okay. I have no further questions for my colleagues. So I'll open it to the public, but have no request to speak, and we'll close it to the public and bring it back to the board for motion.
I'll move tentative approval of the support to county departments functional subarea, including any supplemental document changes, if in fact there are any.
There is one.
All right.
Second. Included that. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded that we approve the support to county departments, including the supplemental changes. All in favor, that's tentatively approved, right. And all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. So we still have time to tackle one more, and that would be financing. So, Mr. Buckshot.
Okay, moving on to financing, again, a relatively small portion of the overall budget. As I referenced earlier, the depreciation set aside for buildings as well as automation projects is fully set aside this year. To give you a feel for that, it's about $1.75 million for automation and about $2.5 million for buildings. So it is a fairly sizable sum that's set aside, and again, that can be used for future projects. Additionally, we do have some large automation projects underway this year. I already referenced the property tax system. In addition, new district attorney case management system, as well as a new parks reservation system to move forward with that, which will hopefully not only make the process more efficient, but possibly capture more revenue for parks, as this might increase the usage as making a reservation would be considerably easier. And then just wanted to highlight in the financing section, since some of our debt is included here, that this budget does maintain our extremely low levels of debt, as we've previously discussed.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Buckshy. Questions for my colleagues for Dan? Seeing none, I'll open it to the public. I have no request to speak on this item, so I'll close it to the public and bring it back to the board. Questions or action?
A comment, Mr. Patterson.
Yes, Mr. Teixeira.
I'm very glad to see that the parks reservation system is finally coming to fruition. This has been an ongoing process for many years, served a number of years in the Parks Commission for now Assemblyman Asajjan. This is very critical to our park system and the reservations that we take for the parks and the facilities that county does. And I can't tell you how happy I am to see this finally coming about, and that we will improve the system and it will be profitable, and it's going to be a major milestone for the county. Thank you. That's a motion.
Okay.
Got one of those two.
And a second?
I'll second.
Okay. Moved and seconded that we tentatively approve the financing section of the budget.
Are there supplemental documents?
If there were any, but I see none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And lo and behold, there is only one more functional area, and that is capital and maintenance projects. So why don't we go ahead and tackle that before we adjourn, and I'll ask Mr. Buckshire to give that presentation, please.
Okay. I'll be so brief on this one, I don't even have a PowerPoint slide. So capital is budgeted about $1.3 million this year, and it is in alignment with the five-year capital improvement plan and infrastructure plan that was brought to your board and adopted by your board just a few months ago. So nothing new in here. You've already had the preview on this. You know, a couple of the things that are included, most notably, are some replacement of communication towers. If you look around the hilltops throughout the county, we have our communication system. A lot of those towers are in need of replacement over the next few years. So this is, you'll be seeing these again and again over the next few years as we incrementally replace and upgrade some of these. Additionally, it's an expansion of the fiber optic cable line to the new Atascadero Library and to the mental health facility in Atascadero as well. And then just on the maintenance,
Supervisor Hill, seconded by Supervisor Meacham, that we tentatively approve the capital and maintenance projects functional area of our budget. Discussion? Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. That concludes day one and two of our budget process. So we will adjourn to closed session and then return after closed session to report out. And then we will continue the budget hearing to Wednesday morning, June 13th at 9 a.m. to speak or to address our contributions to outside agencies. So there will be no budget hearing tomorrow on Tuesday. Supervisor Meacham, you had a comment.
Yes, I did, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. And just for the listening audience and those that have been watching this budget hearing, it appears as though we've moved through this pretty quickly, but we have been going through this for 6 months and having briefings through all with all the departments through this. So it's not as though we're coming through here to rubber stamp something, as some may think and suggest, but there's been an awful lot of work, and my compliments to all of those that have participated in this effort. Looks like we have a good budget.
Absolutely. Thanks for making that comment. I'll follow up after Supervisor Gibson.
And that was very much on my mind as well. We talk about efficiency in government. You just saw the Board of Supervisors moving efficiently, but
too efficient.
It happens because we have extraordinary staff in our admin office and all the departments of this county. I think it really is testament to the strategic, the pain plan, as we've called it, a means of grappling with the difficult decisions and trade-offs that we have to make in these difficult economic times. And what Mr. Meacham says is absolutely spot on. The work goes on almost continuously. Mr. Grant referenced the final actions in September, and the next budget starts in October. I understand that imposes a burden on our departments to do that planning, but I think it also helps them get a longer-term view and a consistency of approach that really is beneficial to the county and its residents. So I thank all that are involved, and we'll look forward to concluding this on Wednesday.
That's why we should have a two-year budget.
Yeah. Well, I was about to mention that, Supervisor Meacham. That was something that I've observed in other places, but never at a county. For reasons that Mr. Grant has emphasized and Mr. Buckshire has emphasized over and over again, because of our reliance on state and federal funding, we would simply be redoing the budget. And I think we have a system that works for us. And, yes, it's year-round effort, but you saw the results of that this morning with our familiarity with the various functional areas of our budget, the tremendous amount of work that staff puts in year-round to bring it to this point. And we do meet regularly with staff to review area by area the budget, and by the time we get to this point, the issues are pretty well ironed out. And so I want to thank everybody involved in the process for getting us to this point and through this effort as painlessly as it appears. So Supervisor Meacham, followed by Mr. Grant.
Actually, you just made my argument. They are so efficient and they're so good at this, there's no reason that couldn't be done in a two-year cycle.
Mr. Grant.
Jim Grant, County Administrator. We would like nothing more than to do a two-year budget. Believe me, that it would save a lot of staff time and angst as we go through this each year. And we'll continue to pursue that. And when we think we'll be able to pull it off, we certainly will. It's been on the list for quite some time, and we'll continue to look at that. But I would want to just say that not only have we been talking to the board individually for quite some months, but we return on at least a quarterly basis to inform your board of all the issues that happen and occur with the budget during the year. So our plan is no surprises to the board, that we continually update in public what's going on so that the board is well aware of the issues that are coming before you. And we did actually introduce a proposed budget a number of weeks ago as well, and did a very thorough review of it at that point in time too. So just wanted to make sure that the public understood we do take this public quite often in terms of the budget and those issues that are surrounding it. Thank you very much.
Yes. I do want to follow up with that. Not only do we have our quarterly budget reports, but we also have anywhere from three to four